breeze.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to a special presentation of Jack Benny. This episode is going to present his 10-year anniversary in radio. Really, I don't know exactly why they're doing it at this point. This is 1941. To me, it'd be 1942 would be his 10th anniversary in radio, but however they figured it out, anyway, they believe this is his 10th anniversary. And we have for you a three-part presentation. It's going to start with an episode of Behind the Mic. And Behind the Mic was where they would interview lots of different folks that worked in radio, whether they were producers or they were the actors or they were the stooges. But in this case, they interviewed Jack Benny, and the person that they have doing the interviewing is Don Wilson, which makes it kind of fun. It was done at the same time frame, just a few days before Jack's 10th anniversary special on NBC, and this gave them a chance to talk about his first appearance in radio on the Ed Sullivan Show. And when Jack first appeared, of course, that episode doesn't exist anymore, and for years I thought, well, hopefully a script will turn up sometime and we'll be able to maybe reenact this bit from an old-time radio show and be able to bring it back to the public to so people can hear it. But I never thought we would find Jack, who had the script and saved it for 10 years and then reenacted it on this Behind the Mic episode. So you're going to get a chance to hear Jack's very first bit that he did on radio, and you're going to get a chance to hear him reenact it. So it's not exactly like having the original, but it's about as close as you're going to get. So it's a fun opportunity. And then after that, that's going to go for about 5 minutes, and then we'll segue into the 10th anniversary special that was NBC threw for Jack. The first half of it I've played for you before, and the second half I haven't. The first half was done for radio audiences, so it was meant to be on the air. The second half was not done for radio audiences. It was kind of a private affair. It's strange. I guess they just stopped broadcasting because it's continuous. When I hooked the two together, I noticed that it just went from one to the next, and I just had to cut a little bit of overlap out that they had in there, and it ties together beautifully. But at about the 1 hour mark, it's going to switch, and you'll hear, I mean, basically, the first part is famous radio personalities that are kind of roasting Jack and saluting Jack. And then the last part, the last hour, is more obscure, like politicians and so forth, talking about Jack and people in the industry, so that you might not know as well. But I think it's neat to present this to you anyway, and then you could always stop listening if you find that you're getting bored with it. But I just thought it would be a fun opportunity to bring all three of these things to you. So at the very least, I'd listen to the first 5 minutes, because I think that's pretty cool. Also, I just wanted to point out, some folks have said that I seem kind of sad in my recent podcasts and things. I'm not sad, and they're not recent podcasts. It's part of it. Two things going on here. One, this time of year, historically for me, is always a busy time of year. And so it's difficult, historically always, for me to do some great podcasts. Sometimes my intros aren't as good at this point in the year, or other kind of rushed. The other piece is 5 years ago, when most of my intros come from 5 years ago, the ones that I'm not changing or updating, and I just leave them 5 years ago, that was when Radio Spirits was requesting, doing cease and desist orders, I guess, to the Internet Archive to have them pull down a bunch of different shows, one of them being the Jack Benny shows. And I was concerned at that time that they might pull all the Jack Benny podcasts and things, including mine. But they decided not to do that, or I didn't know exactly what I was going to do if they did that. They don't, I'm 90% sure they don't have the rights, or are no rights for these shows. They are public domain, and they were never copyrighted in the first place. And so we love to share them with all you folks. But I was concerned then that I might be getting a letter and I might have a problem. But that never came to fruition, and it's been 5 years since then, so I'm not concerned anymore about that. And you might hear my old podcasts that sound like I'm concerned. I tried to cut out the parts that talk about that, but it's always a little tricky. So basically, if you hear an old podcast, it's going to have the word classic in the title of the podcast. It'll say Jack Benny Classic Podcast. That's a clue to you that it's a five-year-old introduction that I'm giving you. If it's a new one that I'm doing, like now, I try really hard to say 2016 in there so you know when it's recorded. And that way, if you're hearing this in 2021, you can say, oh, that's not from this year, it's from 5 years ago. So anyway, let's move on and get to the show and enjoy some fun presentation of Jack Benny and Don Wilson and a big tribute to Jack. And I'm glad that when he was alive, he did get a lot of these tributes that folks did. Folks didn't really take Jack for granted. They knew what a special talent he was for years and years and years. And he deserved that. I'm glad he wasn't in obscurity and then loved by us years later. He was loved throughout his life, and he's still loved today by all of us. So without further ado, enjoy.
Thank you, George Hicks, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As George has already told you, Jack Benny will be honored on his 10th anniversary in radio at the gala banquet this coming Friday night, May 9th, at the Biltmore Bowl of the Biltmore Hotel here in Los Angeles.
Gee, I'm nervous already.
Since Jack is one of the very few radio stars who can point to such a record of achievement, it is only fitting that he should appear on today's broadcast of Behind the Mic. Both Jack and I have just left rehearsal for today's Jello program, and while the cast continues across the hall, we've come over here to this little studio to take part in Behind the Mic for a few moments so that Jack can answer some questions about his career in radio, and I'll try to put myself in the role of a typical Jack Benny fan. First, Jack, here's a question that especially fits the occasion. Supposing we go back 10 years and have you tell us about your very first appearance on radio. What was it like, and was it a sponsored show or on the cup like this one?
Well, Stu, or Don, I went on the radio for the first time early in 1932 when Ed Sullivan, the Broadway columnist, invited me to make a guest appearance on his program in New York.
Do you remember what you said?
No. Oh, yes. I'll never forget it. Look what it got me into.
Well, let's hear about it.
All right, I'll give it to you. Now, just to illustrate how times change, particularly in radio, it was a little monologue affair where I walked to the microphone and said, ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking. There will be a slight pause while you say, who cares? Now, that was funny then, Don. It may not sound funny now, but they screamed at it then. Anyway, I went on. I said, I am here tonight as a scenario writer. There's quite a lot of money in writing scenarios for pictures. Well, there would be if I could sell one. They even laughed at that then. Anyway, I'm going back to pictures in about 10 weeks. I'm going to be in a new film with Greta Garbo. They sent me the story last week, and it's a very novel idea. When the picture opens, I'm found dead in the bathroom. I hear? Now, they screamed at that, Don. Imagine 10 years ago. Anyway, I was found dead in the bathroom. I say, it's a sort of a mystery show. I'm found in a bathtub on a Wednesday night. I should have been in Miss Garbo's last picture, but they gave the part to Robert Montgomery. You know, politics. The funny part of it is, I'm really younger than Montgomery. That is, I'm younger than Montgomery and Ward. You'd really like Garbo. She and I were great friends in Hollywood. She used to let me drive her car around town. Of course, she paid me for it. Well, that was it, Don. That's what I said when I first went on the air. That was my first crack at radio.
Well, Jack, if you don't mind my saying so, it sounds a bit like a vaudeville routine.
That's true, Don. Don't forget that radio was unknown to me then. I didn't know whether it was good material or not. I could judge only by stage standards, particularly vaudeville, where I had gained most of my experience.
What was the reaction to your first broadcast, Jack?
Nobody liked it but me. However, on the strength of it, I landed my first radio commercial just 2 weeks later.
Well, I don't blame you for saving the script as a souvenir. But tell me, Jack, when did Mary Livingston start her heckling career on the air with you?
Oh, she's been in my hair since June of 1932. But she did all right by herself before that in vaudeville.
When was that?
Well, about 12 years ago in New York. And it all happened because the girl who ordinarily worked with me became ill just before the show one night. Mary volunteered to substitute, and she's been working at it ever since.
I think that our listeners would like to hear something about the other members of the cast, Jack. Take Rochester, for instance. How long has he been with you?
Well, Rochester started with the program back in 1937 when he won an audition over 50 other contenders for the role of a Pullman porter. Just a bit part that we had written in for one broadcast only.
But it didn't work out that way.
That's right. He was so good that we kept him on for another week, then another, until he finally became a regular member of the cast.
Well, Jack, I'm often asked about the preparation of your program. How long does it take on the average?
Well, we never stop working. The schedule is something like this. After a Sunday night broadcast, I get together with Bill Morrow and Ed Beloyne, my writers, and we hand over different ideas for next week. Then we meet early Monday morning and start working. That goes on throughout the week until our first rehearsal, generally held either Friday or Saturday. Then rewriting Saturday night and Sunday morning for the actual broadcast.
You know, Jack, when Mort Lewis asked me to interview you today, he made a specific request that I inquire about your fan mail. He'd like to know about some of the odd and unusual letters that you receive each week.
Well, they are odd and unusual. Honest, Don, you should have my tinfoil troubles.
Tinfoil troubles? Now, what does that mean?
Well, you remember the program early this season when I talked about my collection of tinfoil?
Yes.
Well, ever since that time, Don, I've received letters by the hundreds containing bits of tinfoil to be added to my collection. Believe me, I must have gotten at least 30 pounds of it. And that doesn't count the letters asking me to give the tinfoil to various charities.
Well, Jack, no interview with you would be complete without a few words about your classic feud with Fred Allen. Now, did Allen make the first crack at you or vice versa?
Well, naturally, Don, he started it. I wouldn't say anything nasty. Well, here's what happened, Don. A few years ago, when Allen had amateurs on his program, a little 9-year-old kid named Stuart Cannon played the B on his violin. And when he got through, Allen made a crack that Jack Benny couldn't do that. He ought to be ashamed of himself. Naturally, I was wounded. So I let my nails grow and clawed back. And as many times I've given him a good scratching, I have yet to strike blood. Anyway, Don, that's how it started.
That has been going on ever since.
Yes, sir.
Well, Jack, we're just about through now, and as it's your anniversary, of course, you get the last word.
All right, Don. I just want to thank Mort Lewis for the invitation to appear on today's broadcast for Behind the Mic.
That goes for me, too, Jack. We now take you back to New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, and friends of Jack Benny, the National Broadcasting Company is very happy to welcome you here tonight, and we appreciate your joining in with us in this testimonial to a great artist. We feel that it is fitting and proper that another great artist act as master of ceremonies at this meeting. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you as our master of ceremonies a man who for 12 years has entertained the American audience. He is known as the great discoverer. He discovered, I think, every known radio actor except Jack Benny. And he recently discovered John Barrymore. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to you a man who has done much in the entertainment world, much to give great pleasure and entertainment to millions upon millions of American people, one who has earned the right to preside here as a great artist, one who has presided at programs in the National Broadcasting Company for 12 years, Rudy Vallee.
Jack would say, thank you, Don Gilman. I've been a little bit envious of that throwback to the court jester that we dignify with the term comedian. It's a very great gift, great perhaps as the power that the surgeon has to heal those who are ill, to be able to bring laughter into the heart, minds, and innards of human beings. Comedians, and those who write for them perhaps number into the thousands. But few, indeed, become really great, truly great. And in radio, with its voracious appetite for material and its persistent weekly demand for outstanding performance, has made very few who are truly and indeed great. Our man of the evening is one of these very fortunate, unusual few. I could say that we are here to pay tribute to him, but those of us who are in radio and who know the National Broadcasting Company are here chiefly to see NBC get the check. We're here to see NBC pay at the source. And if you didn't enjoy your dinner, might I suggest a little later on that you order something special? Anything you'd like. The best thing in the house. Caviar, if possible. And if you didn't enjoy the wine, get the best vintage of 1932 and 33. Those were the best years. Order plenty of it. I want to see NBC go deep this time. Jack Benny, cradled in vaudeville, came up through radio, as many of us did, and I'm going to leave others to tell you what he has done, but I'd like to point out in passing, as a radio performer myself, the innovations for which he is more or less responsible. He wasn't the first to take a band leader or a singer and make him a speaking part of his program, but at least he had the courage to change them in midstream, which many of us have never done. And the fact today that many of our shows are 30 minutes in length are unquestionably due to the fact that Jack was the first to take the 30-minute show and prove that it could be as great in popularity, if not greater, than the hour show. For that, I can't forgive him, because I like the hour show myself. Jack proved, too, contrary to what George White and others in show business would have you believe, that you could lay off during the summer, come back in the fall and garner all your votes again, and have your listening audience greater than ever. Those are truly great innovations for which we in radio are deeply appreciative. And he has done something that I've always felt should be done, and that is to spotlight the others in your cast and sometimes let them even take greater prominence than yourself. And he does it with the greatest magnanimity for which people love him. West Coast NBC, profiting by East Coast NBC's 10th anniversary at the Waldorf Astoria, of which little should be said, has decided to make tonight's affair one of wit, humor, comedy. The laity, those with their dry as dust statistics and speeches, will be in the minority. I asked for a gong so as a junior major bulls I might gong them into obscurity if they went over too much allotted time. That was denied me, but I hope that those who are not of the comedy trend will make their speeches very brief this evening, because we want it to be a gay evening. We want the speeches and even the comedy to be short so that you can come back to ordering the special meals and your champagne and enjoy yourself dancing afterwards. Jack Benny has that quality of personality and that outstanding something, that unique quality of his humor, has somehow kept him apart from the forked tongue of jealousy that most people in show business have known only too well. I've never heard anyone, not even his own colleagues, ever at any time speak enviously of Jack and his work. For that reason, every comedian who does pay tribute to Jack tonight, I know speaks from the fullness of his heart with all the sincerity at his command. I want to present the first one in order, as our routine goes this evening, a young fellow who recently received his draft number. Fortunately, he was able to secure deferment due to the fact that he has a very dependable. And, what the hell am I talking about anyway? I want to present him because he's fortunate, as I say, in securing that deferment that he could be with us this evening. Charlie McCarthy and his dependable, Edgar Bergen.
Well, I can't do justice to this tribute to Jack Benny without my partner, Charlie McCarthy. And I believe between the two of us, we'll do it up as it should be done. Charlie. How is it, Dal?
No.
Did Benny get any laughs?
No.
To be invited to this dinner and to sit at this table makes me very proud.
I'm dying, folks. I'm bleeding blood, all right.
To have an opportunity to express my admiration for that great showman, that comedian, Jack Benny. I'm very happy to have that occasion.
That ain't the way you talk about him around the house.
All right.
That's right. NBC told him to say that.
No. They did nothing of the kind.
Well, I know they censored my speech. But I remember most of it. I could quote it. By God, I will. And he's so damn smug.
All right.
Think I could make it. All right.
I hope the rivalry among radio comedians will continue in the pleasant and healthy state that it's in, because I think it is great sport. I've known Jack a long time. As a matter of fact, we worked in vaudeville together.
Yeah. Between the two of you, you weakened it so Bob Hope could make the kill.
Yes. Charlie, do you want all these people to go home?
No, just Jack.
No, all right. Do
to go home thinking that you're not a gentleman, that you can't behave like a gentleman?
No.
That you can't censor your own speech?
No.
You don't want him to think that?
No, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, fine.
Wouldn't you like to say something nice to Mr. Benny?
Yes, I would. Yes.
I want you to be a gentleman. I want you to be a fine gentleman tonight.
Yes, yes.
Look how well Jack behaves himself.
He's rehearsed it.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Benny, we of the younger generation bow in reverence to your proud gray toupee.
No.
You are a great showman, Mr. Benny. You're one in a thousand. When you were created, they broke the mold. I can't say that I blame them.
All right.
I think you're very, very comical. Ha ha.
Yes.
Even though your Crosley may not be as high as ours, even though you do not have as great a listening audience, we still, it does not mean that you're no good. Entirely. Well, not me. Even though you're Crosley... Charlie, huh? You're... will you stop nudging? What? That's Crosley. What? What? I say our Crosley. It isn't I. What are you saying, man?
Yes. No. Our Crosley is not higher than that.
It is not higher. Are you mad?
No.
He is a grand showman. He is... Are you sure about that? He's a lovable fellow. What is our Crosley?
Ours? Yes. Our Crosley is 31.
31.
0.2.
31,
yes.
What's Stinker's?
Jack's Crosley is 33.
Yipe! Why, you stingy miser, you great...
All right, understand. Well, we are not going to let that Crosley interfere with our friendship.
No.
No. No, we're far above that.
Yeah? Then why do you whip me every time you read to Crosley?
No.
I'm not even allowed to mention Rochester's name around the house.
Oh.
It isn't Chasen Sanborn that's keeping you awake at night. It's Jell-O.
Is that something?
And we don't even keep the damn stuff in the house.
Is that something?
You've gone pretty far, Bergen.
Yes.
He even tore up the picture of Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, no. Well, we are here to celebrate Jack's 10th anniversary.
Yes.
He's made a career of radio.
We could have done it in half the time.
Yes.
And I'm afraid we will.
But I want to say in all seriousness, Jack, that the crown of Crosley rests on the head where it fits the best. So we bow to you, King Jack. And we're very happy to have it just this way, and may it continue for a long time.
And believe me, Jack, if we can steal it from you, by God, we will.
These two personalities, like our man of the evening, were cradled in vaudeville. Like Jack, they came up through the hard way in radio, but so great is their homespun appeal to the millions of radio listeners that during a layoff occasioned by a severe illness of one of the two, they came back greater, bigger than ever, with their Crosley approximating the other two. It's a pleasure to present Fibber McGee and Molly.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We just want to briefly congratulate Jack Benny sincerely on his 10th anniversary.
Oh, indeed we do. Isn't it wonderful, McGee?
You bet. Any guy that can parlay a fiddle and a polar bear and Fred Allen into a career deserves all he can get. And what does he get?
What does he get?
Yeah, what does he get?
Why, he gets a fine dinner and 35% off on all RCA radios.
That's really wonderful. Thank God they finally took our picture. Ah, it's really wonderful, you know, Molly, 10 years on radio. That's something, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's grand. I tell you.
How long have we been on the radio?
How long have we been on?
Yeah.
16 years.
16 years. What did NBC give us on our 10th anniversary?
Don't you remember, dearie?
No.
Why, that's the year they started signing our contracts with ink. McGee, I heard.
Huh?
I heard that Jack is going to own his own network when he gets through with his contract.
Huh? Why not? NBC has to give a network to somebody.
I think we better sit down, dearie.
Huh?
We better sit down.
Why?
I'm hungry.
Just why the sponsor should be the butt of so many jokes in radio is something I've never been able to understand, because after all, he's the man who pays and pays and pays. Although sometimes his wife may run the program, it's still the man who pays. I had hoped to use the analogy that it would be as difficult for a Yale man to say something nice and kind about a Harvard man as it would be to introduce this particular sponsor. But I discovered shortly before the dinner got underway that I should have remembered it from a banquet back in New York several years ago, that we both have the same alma mater, New Haven. So I can't use that analogy, but I will say that it's a little difficult for me to be kind and generous in this introduction after 10 years of having tried to sell yeast, Chase and Sandwin coffee, and royal gelatin to introduce a man who sells Maxwell House and Jell-O. It is difficult, and I know the standard brands would never forgive me for it, but I do feel that most of you should realize that this man is the very important keystone in the arch of all that is radio. For the benefit of the uninitiated, radio consists of vaguely three or four forces. First, the sponsor, the advertising agency, the network, and the performer. And any hostile legislation or any forces inimical to the interests of any one of the four is a death knell to radio. And we hope that nothing ever will destroy the harmony of the working of these four. It wasn't until these sponsors dared to unloosen their purse strings and invest millions of dollars a year in radio programs that radio came into big time, into its own. And it is only from these profits that the networks in turn were enabled to bring to the masses of radio listeners cultural and educational programs, symphony programs, and other things that have made radio really interesting and worthwhile. So I feel that the debt to the sponsors is indeed a very great one. Perhaps the greatest compliment I can pay this gentleman is to say that he had the courage and faith, when other sponsors possibly didn't feel the faith that he felt in Jack Benny, to underwrite him for the tune of many millions and to see his dream come true. I'd like to present the president of General Foods, Chester Colby. Brother, may I correct myself? Colby Chester.
Mr. Toastmaster, guest of honor, ladies and gentlemen, I would be negligent indeed if I did not express to our host and the great organization he represents profound appreciation for this wonderful tribute to Jack Benny. I am sure the hero of the evening would be the first, however, to pay deference to the men and women who have provided the physical means whereby his fame has been established. As millions of Americans sit nightly in their royal boxes, their own homes, and listen while history and art and science, joy and sorrow, and the human interest stories of the daily life of a great people are brought before us, we are apt to forget the years of research, the vast sums of money, and the devotion of the inventive minds that have made it all possible. We pay them tribute, too. As a spokesman for the General Foods family, I am profoundly pleased to appear here tonight at the birthday party of our famous son. Frankly, I think you all should know that our boy Jack has been no pampered son. He has shaped his career in the American tradition. He has made good on his own. He is truly a self-made success. And certainly, he has been a success, unprecedented in the world of entertainment. Incidentally, perhaps it would not be amiss if for a moment we examined the role played, not by this outstanding favorite of radio, but by the sponsor. What is the sponsor's job? Well, one job is giving autographs. By the way, Jack, I must get yours before I leave. You have been getting mine for every week. Now for the last 7 years. But seriously, it is our belief that a sponsor has a tremendous responsibility to the public. Like his products, a sponsor's radio program must have high merit, and they must give rich satisfaction week in and week out. The sponsor must get performers in whom the public has confidence, provide the show with a far-reaching network, and then allow the star to produce the show as he sees it. And that is what we have tried to do. We have given Jack Benny free rein to entertain and delight, to build up a unique characterization. We have allowed him to give full expression to his marvelous talents, and proudly we have watched him take the lead and hold it. That is why I say that if this night is a great triumph and glory for Jack Benny, it is because he deserves it. He has earned it. It is his alone. The boy from Waukegan has the goods, and the radio public will agree with me. He delivers it every time he goes to bat. It is important, too, I think, that someone point out this revealing fact. Jack Benny's programs have sparkled and exploded with fun, but he leans ever backward to make them clean. Decent fun for the whole family's ears and welcomed in the households up and down our land. The script often seems to require Jack to suffer setbacks. He often gets buffeted about. He meets disappointments. But he is there trying. He can't be squelched. He can't be dismayed for long. There is something magnificent and inspiring in an unconquerable spirit like that. Perhaps, secreted in the tumult of laughter, There is a brave lesson for all of us in the Jack Benny program. Yes, he'll do. He'll pass any test. After all, you remember the famous old Latin saying, Bene homo generosus. Bene alumnus. Bene judex ropi bene. Freely translated, this means a gentleman, a scholar, a judge of a good cigar. Yes, indeed, those old Romans knew their bene. Bene dicere, to speak well. Bene facere, to do well. Bene vivere, to live happily. Bene populi, belonging to the people. And that's our Jack. So I salute you, Jack Benny, and Mary Livingston, too. None of us know what is in store for this land of ours, but whatever it is, be it blood or tears, toil or sorrow, or years of peace and contentment, may your voices continue for many, many years to come to bring joy and laughter to America's listening millions.
Now you see what we learn up at New Haven. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Eli, for your brevity and for your faith, and for your faith in Jack Benny. I find words feeble in trying to express the word friendship, and these two people are perhaps the dearest friends that Jack Benny and Mary Livingston know. Together they've shared their hopes, their joys, their sorrows, and their very great triumphs. Two of these finest people in radio. I rarely use the word swell, but I'll say two of the swellest people in radio, Grace, George, and Gracia.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gracie and I were thrilled to be asked to say a few words on this occasion because we've known Jack Benny all our lives, and we're very happy to be here.
I'm not.
And, of course, this is the first time NBC has ever honored one of their stars on this occasion. And it's really a thrill. It's really a thrill to be here tonight.
I don't think so.
Oh, quiet. And if there's anything you want to know about Jack, I'll be glad to tell you.
Because nobody cares what I think.
Of course.
Nobody ever listens to me except myself. You can't go by me. I listen to anybody.
I've known Jack all my life.
I'm well.
As a matter of fact, we've been handled by the same.
Anyway, I've got my own ideas about this dinner. I think the whole thing is
going. Patrick was the fella, and
if anyone's going to be giving the dinner, it should be Mary Livingston. She's the one who ought to have this dinner. She's the one who ought to have the dinner,
even
Mary.
Even in those days.
Poor Mary. Mary deserves the dinner if I ever saw a person deserve a dinner. She deserves the dinner.
Quiet. Mary Livingston.
Yeah, Mary Livingston. Yes. She's the one.
Yes.
Jack's wife.
Here. I know that. Yes. What's bothering you, Gracie?
Oh, I think the whole thing is ridiculous. Poor Mary. She's been home cooking for Jack for 10 years, and they finally get a chance to go out one night and they give him the dinner.
You think NBC ought to give Mary the dinner?
Sure. She could do with a good dinner.
I see.
She looks like she hasn't eaten for years.
I see. Yeah, the kid has been leading a hard life.
Sure, that's just because Jack is cheap, that's
cheap,
all.
Yes.
Just plain cheap.
Yeah, the cheapest fella in the whole world, I guess.
He doesn't pay her enough to buy peanuts.
How do you know?
She only gets a little more than I do.
Gracie, what about those diamond bracelets that she wears and those diamond clips?
Yeah, but she has to wear them all the time.
I see.
He wouldn't even buy her a safe to put them in.
He's cheap, yes. Yeah. Cheap kid. Saw her coming home the other day with Jack, and she had 7 Lily Dashay hats that she just bought.
I bet she had to carry them.
It's too bad, yeah. Shame.
Fine gift, buying her 7 hats. He knows she's only got one sister to give them to.
A sister, Babe.
Yeah,
Babe.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one that's married to that black-faced comedian, Mike Plum. Well, don't worry about Mary. She's doing all right. Jack just bought her a beautiful home with a big swimming pool.
Oh, sure. Full of water.
Full of water, yeah.
What does he want her to do, drown herself?
That reminds me, I got to fill our pool, too.
Yeah. Poor Mary.
Yes.
She gets up early every morning, never gets a chance to see the daylight.
Never gets a chance to see the daylight?
No, by the time she walks through the 56 rooms to the front door, it's dark outside.
Why doesn't she go out the back way?
Can't. Full of riders.
Full of riders?
Sure.
Got riders in the back room?
Sure. Jack uses them on the back room floor instead of bearskin rugs.
That Bill Morrow must feel at home there.
Sure, he does.
Yes.
You know, you can kill yourself if you step on his head.
Yes.
Very slippery.
Slippery, yes, I know. All right, Gracie, Jack is a big meanie.
Yes,
he's a heavy.
He certainly is.
He's a bad man.
Yeah. And look at Mary's poor brother, Hiller.
Hiller.
Yeah. Jack ever give him an opportunity?
Never,
no. Let's have Hiller take a bow.
Let's have Hiller take a bow.
Hiller,
there he is.
There's a kid that could use a good dinner.
Oh, yes, he could. Jack only pays him $500 a week.
Yeah, well, where's the advancement in that?
I guess no advancement.
Wasn't Jack's brother-in-law, I bet he could be working at the May Company.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. That's Hillard over there.
Yes.
He should be very proud to have Jack for brother-in-law.
Well, I guess it could be worse.
Of course it could be.
Sure, it could be Cantor's son-in-law.
That would be... Wouldn't be good. You know, I know Hillard when he was a little baby.
Really?
Yes.
Bet he looked like Arthur Lines.
Yes, he did.
Huh?
About 10% of him looked like Arthur Lines. Small Arthur Lines.
Yeah, well, you know, as a matter of fact, they still look alike.
Hillard and Arthur Lines.
Yeah, they're both round-shouldered around the waist.
Around the waist. Round-shouldered.
Yeah.
Hillard should do as well as Arthur Lines.
Yeah, Jack Benny should do as well as Arthur Lines. Oh, boy. You ought to see the offices that Lines has.
Nice offices.
Ooh, they're beautiful.
Really terrific.
They're the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's
a... It's a regular Jewish Shangri-La. Oh, it's lovely.
A Jewish Shangri-La?
Yeah.
You mean nobody ever dies there?
Yeah, oh, no? You ever see Lester Lynch?
Lester Lynch?
Yeah.
That's that small Tom Harrington,
yeah,
isn't that
yeah,
the fella?
Yeah.
I thought so. Lester Lynch.
Yes.
Did you ever meet the Arthur's brother, Sam Lyons?
Sam Lyons?
Yes.
Oh, is he the one who's the interpreter for Jack Benny's father?
Yeah, that's the fella.
Oh, yeah, I saw him.
Yes, that's the fella.
Yes.
Well, anyway, Gracie, Sam Lyons, Arthur Lyons, Lester Lynch, Tom Harrington, Hillard, everybody thinks Jack is a wonderful fella.
What about Harry Conn?
Quiet. Harry Conn. I still think Jack is a wonderful fella.
I don't think he's so wonderful. I think Mary's a wonderful fella.
All right, they're both wonderful fellas.
So is Mary.
All right.
Mary's a wonderful
fella. We both agree, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, let me finish my speech. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're very happy that Jack has been giving this honor, and deservedly so. Jack has been the number one comedian on the air for years.
I don't think he's so wonderful. If he's so wonderful, why doesn't he get a valet for Mary like Rochester? Then she can be the number one comedian on the air, too. I think Mary deserves it.
I think we've said enough.
She's
that's
the
plenty.
One who should have the dinner.
I remember this young fellow, he of the retrousse nose, in a show called Ballyhoo in 1932 or 33. In radio, he took considerable time to find himself. and 12 writers. But when he did find himself, his socko and youthful type of humor has captured the imagination of radio audiences and is one of the pride and joys of the National Broadcasting Company and his sponsor. It's a pleasure to present the young man who popularized Thanks for the Memory, or the boy who popularized Irium, or the boy who popularized the tooth powder, or Bob Hope.
Thank you very much. You get on here according to your Crosley. But I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, Mr. Valley. You've improved. I don't know, you seem to be a different Valley. You're stronger. I guess that's him holding up Barrymore. But anyway, I am very happy to be here, ladies and gentlemen, at this fine affair. If I'd known they were going to routine it this way, I'd have had my agent down to see you earlier, Gilman. But I really haven't much material prepared. I'm also working pictures. But it's a thrill being here anyway at this wonderful publicity stunt. I think this night may revive Benny. Ten years on the radio, that's an awful lot of time to spend to try to top Fred Allen, isn't it? No, but I tell you, I'm really surprised that I'm up here on the dais. Mary gave me my choice of speaking or having a table in the men's room. But I don't know the fellas from the Columbia Broadcasting Company, so I didn't want to... But it's a kick anyway, and this is a fine dinner. I want to congratulate NBC. It's a great dinner. I've tasted the food and the drinks and everything, and I don't think it's possible that they have to sell the Blue Network just to pay for this. getting back to our guest of honor, and sincerely, Jack, I don't have to tell you, does a great program. In fact, he's my favorite among the older comedians. And you can't deny that he's very funny. He's a very funny man. I wish I could walk that way. And he's had a lot of rating for years. He never has to worry about rating. They don't ask what Benny's Crosley is. They just say, who's second? And I've been very jealous of his show because he has a lot of continuity. So easygoing. Continuity. That's French for let's go to Palm Springs and the hell with the jokes. But I followed Jack for years. I heard him. I think I heard his first program on the air. I laughed so hard I dropped my earphones. Really, it was wonderful. And I know that everybody listened. You folks must have heard him. He goes on 48 hours before the Pepsodent show. Fortunately for my writers, but it's really a great thing. And that's really an achievement, 10 years in the radio. In that time, 10 years, you could make enough money really to afford the kind of food your ulcers won't let you eat. And I think everything's been said about Jack. I don't want to say too much. I mean, you hear people, I know him very well. I was in vaudeville with him, too. And you hear people say he's tight. I happen to know that he's a generous fellow. In fact, right now he's supporting 14 relatives and a married couple from Anaheim who claim they can grow hair. Yeah. And you know that radio is rough on hair. In fact, your forehead and your Crosley go up together. Of course, he is a little thrifty. The Bank of America has a branch out in Beverly Hills they call Bundles for Benny. And every week he goes over to Crosby's house, and they decide whether they're going to foreclose on the White House or not. In fact, it's a toss-up in Hollywood, whether Benny or Crosby have, which one has the most money. You can't decide. Neither one of them will toss up anything. But I happen to know he's a grand guy. In fact, the other night I saw him down on Hollywood Boulevard passing out dollar bills. It was the same night I saw Hearst going in to see Citizen Kane. But really, I've tried to be funny, and I just want to be serious for just a few minutes, which would probably be funnier. And I just happen to know that we all know that Jack is a great, great comedian. Has a style. And all I want to say is that when bigger laughs are manufactured, Rochester will get them. Thank you very much.
Jack Benny's film boss is a man of the Old South, a man who knows his theater, and it is no mere coincidence that some of the best Benny pictures have been made since he took over at Paramount. Mr. Y. Frank Freeman.
Paper shaking in my hand is not caught by any breeze. Tonight, the radio industry is paying tribute to one of its great artists, Jack Benny. We of the motion picture industry wish here, at this time, to thank our radio friends for the privilege they have extended to us of adding a few words to theirs in honoring Jack Benny. He is one of our great artists, too, and we are glad to tell the world that we are proud of him. Laughter today is a priceless treasure. We need so much more of it. To be able to entertain millions, to bring some measure of relief from the stark realities of life, we believe this is a service that can never be measured in its real, true value to men, women, and children of our world today. Jack Benny, like the real, true artist he is, gives us all of this and more. We in the motion picture industry know of his contributions to every worthy cause for charity. Not only does he give of his time, but he gives of his money unstintingly as well. It is a well-known axiom in our industry that you do not have to worry about Jack Benny. He always does his share and a lot more. The word intolerance is unknown to Jack. To the worthy cause he gives of his time, of his energy, and of his money, regardless of religion, race, or creed. He typifies the real, true American spirit. Now, Jack, in behalf of your fellow workers and associates in the motion picture industry, and as their spokesman tonight, will you please accept from us our sincere and deep felt appreciation for all you have done and will continue to do for us. And please further accept from us our tribute to you, first to Jack Benny as one of us, second to Jack Benny, the real, true, great artist, and third to Jack Benny, the humanitarian and friend of all mankind.
Had I known that the next gentleman was going to be in town, I would have certainly relinquished this position, asked him to fill my shoes, because he is a toastmaster to end all toastmasters. I've watched him at so many of the Jewish Theatrical Guild dinners at the Commodore in New York, where he holds forth as only he can. Many of you are way ahead of me because you know that I'm referring to the man who's done so much for the youth of America, George Jessel.
Mr. Toastmaster, honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, this is a distinct privilege to be asked to speak here tonight. I have spoken at ever so many dinners in the past 6 or 7 months, and I'm very honored to have been asked to come here. I've had a particularly busy season. Those of you who have been reading the newspapers will know I've been particularly busy this year. No, besides that, I've been working very hard. I really have. My coming here to make a speech is the quintessence of actual sincerity because I am in no way associated with any of the guest of honor's activities. I'm not active in the radio. I'm not active in pictures. To be very truthful, outside of gin rummy, I'm not active in anything. I have been speaking throughout the country on various subjects. I should say within the last 6 or 7 months, I have spoken on practically everything you can think of. From an address at Harvard College to a benefit for the poor assistant directors of Odessa. Added to that, I have been speaking all over the country wherever I might be engaged in nightclubs, for example. I appeared only lately in Miami. The management of a nightclub, knowing that I would be so close to the language, figured that I would be an asset to their association. I was engaged to come to Miami at a nightclub, not a very elaborate one, just a very small place to dance and a few tables to dine. But upstairs, they had a very big business in that place. I was to be there 8 weeks, but the opening night, a gentleman made an eight the hard way, and the joint folded. Mr. John Royal, whom I've known for many, many years, who I think has done more for broadcasting than almost any other executive that I know of, said, "Georgie, you should make something of a key speech." Well, a key speech about humanity and mankind, you hear so much of them. I was particularly interested in what the head of Paramount, Mr. Freeman, said a moment ago. I have known Benny for a long, long time. We were associated in vaudeville. Alas, poor vaudeville, gone down the road with forgotten fads like rats for women's hair, shaving cups, and single features. Mr. Benny and I appeared together along. He was at that time Benny and Woods, a musical act, classical music in dress clothes, and the audiences laughed like hell. He then became a monologist on his own, Ben K. Benny. It was a vogue at that time to have a middle initial. Most people thought there was a profundity to have a middle initial. George M. Cohen, Sam H. Harris, John L. Sullivan, Ben K. Benny, and Chico Dice Marks. I remember his routine. A funny thing, he said, happened coming to the theater today. Now, it's a funny thing if anybody comes to the theater. And I was particularly interested, and particularly since I'm only a visitor out here maybe once or twice a year, to see of this lovely halo that surrounds his head, this lovely boy that never a breath of scandal has been whispered about. Not that I'm the one to talk of such things. I recall saying goodnight to my fiancé at that time, the current fiancé, at Toledo, Ohio. As I kissed her goodbye, he kissed her hello. And answered very whimsically it was the only game in town. I like this fellow. I've known him a long time. I know his father, the William Allen White of Waukegan. I met him only a short time ago in Miami. He said, did you hear my son Jack the other night? I said, no, he's on Sunday. This is Thursday. He said, no, he was on a charity program, Bagels for Britain. And as I say, I come here, ladies and gentlemen, with only admiration in my heart. I am not on the radio at the moment. In fact, so little of the new programs, I mean, have anything but Genie with the Hair. And the quiz shows. Unfortunately, for my type of mentality, I mean, I am not adequate to be a participant in these quiz shows. I heard one the other night. The new one. Win it, guess it, catch it, and schmeck it, and everybody wins a prize. Vitally interesting. The announcer said, all right, now everybody on your mark. Be keyed up. Be mentally smart if you want to win a prize. Step up, young man. Young man stepped down to the audience. Says, what is your name? Fella says, Joe Krause. Oh, take $3. Oh, if the fellow would have known his own address, he can break that company immediately. I've come a long way, ladies and gentlemen. And the shrine is far where my weary feet might be. I come from a little town over 3,000 miles away, formerly called New Amsterdam. New York, they called it, but it doesn't seem to be New York since my eldest son is not the chief magistrate of that great city. I have only one thing to say about Benny and his program because it's vital, not only to me, but to all of us. The success of the Jack Benny program is a very accurate and very lovely picture of the system, please God, under which we live. Now look at it. A company of actors, Americans all, and yet all with different religious persuasions. Eddie Rochester, a Baptist or a Methodist. Schlepperman of the Jewish faith. Divine, an Episcopalian. Mara and Boulogne, Catholics, I believe. And from the melting pot of all these emotions comes a great program. That's what makes it a great program. Now you can go further. The audience... We, the audience who listen to it, the same thing. Americans all, Jews, Catholics, Protestants, Episcopalians, Mormons, whatever religious denomination you please... Because of the tolerance of all these people put together, that's what makes us a great audience. That, please God, that's what makes this a great country. Long, long may it live, and long may it laugh at Jack Benny. It was my... With all apologies to the Toastmaster. It was my duty at one time to be Toastmaster for the city of New York without portfolio. It was my good fortune at that time to make a great many speeches in the mayoralty campaign in 1924. At that time, I introduced the man who was to be the mayor as Father Knickerbocker's truly begotten son. I hope that he will not feel that I'm impertinent in asking him to say a few words. I who have known him since the age of 8, love him very dearly, as do all good Americans. May I ask him, with permission of all concerned, Jimmy Walker.
This is the first time that my dearest of all friends has ever injected me into a family quarrel. I was having a very lovely time. Amid the nervous apprehension that must of necessity exist between great people. Settle on this board tonight, and I felt again the revived and delightful thrill of years ago when I found myself in competition. Now, in spite of the things that Georgie has said and said so ably, look at the damn thing now. I've turned out to be a buttonhole maker. Jack, I'm very happy to be here. As a long-distance devoted admirer of you, may I make a public confession, more particularly of Mary. Of course, you're used to that now. But you hear the truth from everybody. But thanks to this very unusual, very marvelous gathering, and after 10 years' absence from these very delightful, if uncertain, circumstances that obtain in Hollywood, I find myself back with the privilege of renewing. I hate those damn lights because... Thanks very much. There was a time a great many people here couldn't see me, but I'm very happy to be able to see them tonight. I rather like it. I'm used to late dinners and used to being late for dinners. But this one was just a little bit too late for talking. And yet there's a camaraderie here. It's time to relax. I'm not a comedian. I'm not on radio, and I'm not in competition. Just have one word to say. It's exemplified by the great popularity which Jack Benny and his company have earned throughout this country. And it is this. That in some parts of the world, when They forgot to laugh. They remembered to fight. I visited Washington very recently, and thanks to the hospitality of the President Pro Tem of the United States Senate, enjoyed a very inspiring lunch with a dozen members of the Senate. Men sat around the table and exchanged stories. The cares of state and the worries of the world were behind them. They were human. And I left that room with a feeling that if the same feeling existed around the world, there wouldn't be the difficulties that hang heavily over you and me. To these young people, they are young comparatively, because everybody that I meet nowadays, though he may be tottering and palsied, finds a relative measure of saying, well, I'm younger than Walker. Just shows you, Jack, how publicity does creep up and accumulate. I would like to be able and privileged tonight, something which I have put out of my mind completely, and with great satisfaction to myself, to speak authoritatively, to speak for the most blessed and the most beloved people, largely because of its great cosmopolitan population, the people of my native and my beloved city. I might wish that tonight I wore a badge of authority, that I might lay a grateful word at the feet of this delightful couple for the pleasure and the joy that they have brought to the people with whom I live. But even though I don't speak with authority, I still speak accurately. There is nobody in the old town, Jack, but our people are more devoted to, find greater comfort, greater happiness in, than with you. Now, an example of that is that my children eat Jell-O. And they eat it because their parents wouldn't probably have known about it if it weren't for you. And if it's been a profit to you, please have the personal satisfaction that it's been a mutual profit. Is that a plug, or I don't know. If it is, in spite of the fact that I'm very happy to be here, Georgie shouldn't have done this to me. He knew that I was waiting for my wheelchair. And he knew that I needed to be revived before I should attempt any such thing as this. For though the words are halting, and the speech is uncertain, the heart is full. Full not only for this delightful couple, but with a thrill of feeling of a renewal of old and very genuine acquaintance. Because I'm the one fellow that really knows that Hollywood is not all synthetic. That if you cut beneath it all, with the showmanship obliterated, and the demands that are made upon men in public life, men who live, and women too, in the spotlight, and underneath the skin, it's like His Lordship's Lady and Julie O'Grady were all just human beings, and because of that, we are devoted. to this lovely company. Thanks.
Thank you, Jimmy Walker, for responding. As he rises for a bow, may I ask for a very cordial and congratulatory, victorious hand of applause for the finest mayor that the city of Los Angeles has ever known, Fighting Fletcher Bowron. And a very cordial welcome for that dynamo who directs affairs out of 20th Century Fox Studios, Darryl F. Zanuck. This gentleman knows and loves radio as much as any of us who know radio and who love it. He came up through radio in the South, but won his first chevrons in Chicago, the Windy City, where he achieved a vice presidency. When the time came, they felt that he was the man to fill the president's shoes in Radio City. He has a southern dialect that stays unchanged throughout the years because it's typical of his sincerity, his honesty, his courage, and his love of that giant maker that we in radio know and love, radio itself. It's a pleasure to present Untrammeled Niles Trammell.
Mr. Postmaster, our honored guests, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to be in Los Angeles and Hollywood tonight. Just 18 years ago, I was peddling receiving sets, radio receiving sets, here in Los Angeles and Hollywood. And I'm delighted to be able to return here tonight and find that we're still enjoying that delightful Florida weather that I enjoyed at that time. Seriously, I'm delighted to be here tonight for three very important reasons. First, I'm grateful for the privilege of saluting you men and women of the motion picture industry for what you have contributed to the development of Southern California and the entire nation, for what you have contributed to the enjoyment and education of millions of Americans, and what you have done to spread the American way and the American culture to every corner of the world. I'm happy to salute you, especially the spokesman for radio, because our two industries are so closely allied on so many fronts. In common, we appeal to and hope to amuse great masses of people. We cater to mass demand for entertainment and enlightenment. We reach for the friendship of our Latin American neighbors and draw on talent resources that each of us develop. We have given you star after star, and you have used them, made them shine all the brighter, and given them back to us, increased in stature and in value. And for this, radio thanks the motion picture industry. The second reason I'm delighted to be here tonight is the privilege of paying tribute to one of the great private enterprises of our country. the great General Foods Corporation, and to the able and distinguished chairman of its board of directors, Mr. Colby Chester. Not alone for their great job of selling on the air, nor for their magnificent research on behalf of the consumer, nor for the food economies they have affected, but for their foresight, intelligence, and generosity in undertaking such a vital role in a new medium for the dissemination of information, entertainment, and culture. We in radio regard General Foods as one of our real pioneers. They began to use the medium of broadcasting for the sale of their products as early as 1927. Since then, they have added program after program, from the old showboat days to today's Maxwell House coffee time with the impish baby Snooks to Kate Smith. We the People, the Aldrich family, Jack Benny's Jell-O again, to say nothing of the 7 daytime shows of far-reaching importance. In its radio activity, General Foods Corporation have done more than a selling job. It has helped strengthen and preserve the American way of life. For it was in the American way that our system of broadcasting has been developed along the fundamentals of free private enterprise. To the intelligent American broadcaster who appreciates the significance and importance and the responsibility of his position, a client is the most noble work of God. I say that with all sincerity, not only because the association between broadcaster and manufacturer helps to move commerce, but because without the revenue of the manufacturer, the non-commercial services radio now gives the American people could not exist. Without the commercial sponsor, we would have no Toscanini, no University of Chicago Roundtable, no news coverage from the theaters of war, no National Farm and Home Hour, no Catholic Hour, nor other religious and educational programs. Without our commercial sponsors, there would be not even a Jack Benny as we know him today. Jack Benny, ladies and gentlemen, is my third and final reason to feel proud, happy, and honored to be here tonight. It is a privilege for any radio broadcaster or for any individual in America to be able to pay tribute to a man who, by his own ingenuity and effort, has contributed so much to the pleasure and relaxation of the American public. I'm not going to bore you with statistics showing how many popularity polls Jack Benny has won in the past year, or how many times he has been rated first in the Crosley surveys, or how many packages of the 6 delicious flavors he has sold for Mr. Chester. I'm not going to tell you what happened to the gas man. That's Rochester. That's for Rochester to worry about. But I cannot avoid telling you what Jack Benny has meant to radio. The night Jack Benny first went on the air, he gave radio and the American people something more precious than mere entertainment. Jack Benny gave us laughter at a time when we needed it most. The night of his radio debut, there came to life a new comedy formula, a formula that we in radio call the Jack Benny formula. Never laugh at the other fella, laugh at yourself. That formula brought a refreshing era of national humorous and of laughter. Week after week, our radio comedians gave us back our perspective and restored us to sanity and peace of mind. But our trials and tribulations are not yet over. The spot we are seeking in front of our eyes are mere specks in the light of what future holds in store. For the past 18 months, most of the news radio has given the American people has been bad. And it seems the worst is yet to come. It is in times like these that we are compelled to ask ourselves what is the greatest asset of a nation girding itself for the defense not only of its own shores, but of an entire hemisphere. My answer is this: the morale of the American people. You and I know that war is not always won on the battlefront. More often it is won on the home front. It is the everyday people, the backbone of America, who in the past decade turned to Jack Benny and to other radio and screen comedians for relaxation and sanity. It is to the Jack Bennys they will continue to turn whenever we go to war, whether we go to war or not. And so, the greatest thing that radio and motion pictures and all other forms of entertainment can do in our present national emergency, or for the sake of in the future, is this: maintain the national morale by continuing to give the American people the same natural sources of relaxation and entertainment so admirably exemplified by the outstanding work of the man we honor tonight on his 10th year in radio. And ladies and gentlemen, at this particular time, I would like very much to call on our guest of honor, Mr. Jack Benny.
Thank you, Mr. Trammell. With all the speeches on ahead of me, I thought I'd have to make mine in Armstrong and Schroeder's. Ladies and gentlemen, friends, Trammell, Toastmaster. First of all, I want to thank NBC for inviting so many comedians to speak here tonight. There are 8 comics sitting at the dais, and I'm standing on Milton Berle. God knows, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a ham, and I don't mind how many laughs comedians or any of the fellas get on ahead of me. But I do think that when the guest of honor is a comedian, he should be protected as much as possible. I've always maintained that when you give a testimonial dinner as a tribute to a comedian, don't louse him up. I also can't quite understand why Rudy Vallee was chosen to be Toastmaster tonight. As Mr. Gilman said, I happen to be one of the few actors in our business who was not discovered by Rudy Vallee. Not only was I not discovered by Rudy Vallee, I was also not discovered by Gus Edwards, Joe Pasternak, or Sal Lesser. As a matter of fact, I was found under a rock in Waukegan by Arthur Lyons. And Arthur brought me to New York. His brother Sam took a look at me and said, "Let's sign him up. He's good for 10 years in radio." That's the only lie Sam ever told that turned out right. course, the three of us have been eating ever since. Only on Arthur it's becoming. If I won't bore you, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you why and how we all happen to be here tonight. Originally, NBC was not supposed to give me this dinner. I first submitted the idea to General Foods. In fact, when I was in New York a couple of months ago, I went up to see Mr. Charles Mortimer, who is vice president in charge of Jell-O. And I said, Charlie, I said, on May 9th, I am celebrating my 10th anniversary in radio, and I've got a great idea. I say, why doesn't Foods be a testimonial dinner to mark this occasion? And Mr. Mortimer said, well, Jack, he said, we're strictly businessmen. We don't go in much for entertainment or social activities of that kind. But if you'll speak to your advertising agency, Young and Rubicam, and if they're willing to give you the dinner, we'll be very happy to furnish the Jell-O for dessert. So I went over to see Tom Harrington, who is the vice president of Young and Rubicam. And, of course, it was kind of difficult to mention the subject of a dinner to Harrington. He looks like he hasn't had a square meal in his life. Anyway, I put the proposition up to Harrington, and Tom said, well, Jack, we're in a very peculiar spot. You see, you're not the only program we handle. And if we give you a dinner, Eddie Cantor will want one. So I said, nuts to Cantor, this is my idea. So he said, well, Jack, he said, after all, I said, I've been on the radio for 10 years. He said, but Jack, he says, you see, you haven't been with us 10 years. You've been with NBC 10 years. And if they're willing to, why don't you speak to them about this particular dinner? So I said, okay, Tom, I will. And he said, no hard feelings, Jack. And I said, hell no. So I left Young and Rubicam, and on my way to NBC, as I was walking down Madison Avenue, my brand new hat blew off, and a truck ran over it, which cost me $7.50 right there, and still no dinner. So I went to see Miss Bertha Brainerd, who is a big shot with NBC. And I put the proposition up to her. And she said, well, Jack, she said, you see, says it is a great idea, and it's too bad about your hat. I said, you see, we're in a very, very peculiar spot. You see, that even though you have been with us for 10 years... we have other programs who have been with us even longer. As for instance, now Jim and Jen, they've been with us 15 years. And if anybody deserves the dinner, they do. So I said, who's Jim and Jen? And she says, they go on every morning from 7 to 7:15. So I said, give them a breakfast. I want dinner.
Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, to make a long story short, Miss Brainerd sent me to Mr. Trammell, who sent me to Mr. Royal, and Mr. Royal sent me back here to Hollywood to see Mr. Don Gilman, and Mr. Gilman sent me to see the Western production manager, Mr. John Swallow. So I went to Capistrano, saw Swallow, and here we are. But I am really very happy that we had such a swell affair tonight. I considered all the pannings I got from my rival comedians as being great eulogies. As far as Bob Hope is concerned, incidentally, one of the waiters here I know is Bob Hope's writer. Because when he served me the soup, he tried to sell me 3 minutes on rain in California. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, now that NBC talked me into this dinner, I'm sure that it was not only meant for me, but for all of my associates. You know, to have any kind of a successful radio program, you can't do a monologue or a single. You've got to have an awful lot of help. Got to have fine comedians and fine actors and certainly great writers. You can't get along without them. And I'd like to take just a few moments first to introduce two boys who have been with me now for the past 5 years and have written my radio programs for the past 5 years and have done a great job. Bill Morrow and Ed Boulogne. The only reason I introduced them, I wanted to see if they could stand up. Hey, fellas, it's Friday night. Where's the script? I would like to introduce next, ladies and gentlemen, someone who has been with me longer than before I ever started on radio. My wife, Mary Livingston. I'd like to have my little wife say something. She can't do a goddamn thing. And next, may I introduce a chap she'd be a wreck if she had to do something, really.
I want to introduce next. Mary says no. You know, I'm something like Arthur Lines. You know, I found Mary under a pair of socks in the May Company. I want to introduce next a very... Oh, she's... No, really, she's terribly frightened. I want to introduce next my very good friend and very good announcer who has been with me for the past 7 years, Don Wilson. If you don't think I pay salaries, get a load of that stomach that's there. I'm awfully sorry that Phil Harris can't be with us tonight. He's playing one-night stands. He's in Monrovia tonight, I think. When he hits the town about the size of Pasadena, he stays a week there, you know. Next, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce my Charlie McCarthy, Dennis Day. Now, Dennis is a little confused tonight. He thinks Georgie Jessel is giving this dinner for Burns and Allen in the Palladium. He don't know. I think that Schlepperman is with us tonight as a guest, and I'd like to have him just take a bow. Sam Hearn. Schlepperman. Also, Andy Devine. Is Andy here tonight? And last but not least, ladies and gentlemen, a very fine artist, and I think a great comedian, Rochester. You know, I'm starting a new picture at 20th Century Fox called Charlie's Aunt. I'm starting it Monday. And Rochester won't steal that picture, but because he's not going to be in it. Mr. Zanuck called me in his office the other day, and he said, Jack, he said, beautiful office, too. I walked in there, and he said, Jack, I was wondering whether or not we ought to have Rochester in this picture. And I said, well, no, Mr. Zanuck. I said, really, I think I can get all the laughs I need on my own. So he got right down off his horse and hit me with his mallet right there. Of course, I don't know why they keep putting me in those comedy pictures. I don't know, I feel that I am more of the lover type. You know, that I could play those light stories, you know, where you have a lot of love interest and everything. I'm really very good at that. Of course, this whole thing would be much more believable. Miss Livingston would get that silly grin off her face, I think. Well, I think that's about all, ladies and gentlemen. I have been terribly nervous tonight. naturally. But I do want to thank NBC for their wonderful gesture. And I can truthfully say this is the most thrilling and exciting evening that I have ever had in my life. And I also want to, I hope I will be with NBC for the rest of my radio career. I also want to thank my sponsors and the Young and Rubicam Agency for our delightful association. And thanks to all my friends for coming here tonight. Thank you very, very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are two very brief presentations that I'm going to ask you. If you'll just kindly wait just a few minutes. I turn the microphone again to Mr. Freeman. Jack, I have with me here tonight a little token that's been handed to me by members of the Motion Picture Producers Association. This token is only a watch, Jack. There are many watches in the world today. But on it is engraved to Jack Benny in appreciation of his services to humanity. And may I say that that same motto or that same engraving is engraved on the hearts of all of us in the motion picture industry and of all of us that have worked and been associated with you. And that goes far beyond, Jack, the watch that we hand to.
Thank you very much, Mr. Freeman. If I ever get another job at Paramount, I'll sure be on time. That's one thing. Thank you very, very much.
And President Niles Trammell has a gift.
We're really going to drop him down with gifts. We've got three of them for him. But I'm going to make it very brief. We have here a scroll on which we express our admiration and affection for Jack Benny, and it's presented to him in the name of the National Broadcasting Company. I'll not take your time tonight to read it to you because I know the hour is getting late. There you are, my friend Jack.
Thank you.
Now we have something. We have something for Jack and Mary, which they can probably use if Rochester ever finds the gas man. They can probably use this to serve the gas man tea whenever he shows up. In other words, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, it's a silver service.
Thank you, Colonel, very, very much. That I can use. You know, I got a lot of watches, you know, but a thing like that, you know.
Now we have something that is not
goes on all night
of any material value, but it's something that money could not buy. It's a master key to the studios of the National Broadcasting Company in Radio City, New York, and a similar key for the radio studios in Hollywood, California.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
nation white with foam. God bless America.